Good afternoon. I call the Senate Resource Committee to order. Today is Monday, April 24th, 2023. The time is 3:30 p.m. Please silence all cell phones. Co-Chair Geisel, Vice Chair Wilikowski, Senator Kawasaki, myself, Co-Chair Bishop, Senator Klayman is excused for the day. Senator Dunbar will probably be 30 minutes late as he's currently presenting a bill in another committee. We'd like to thank our support staff, Carrie Cooper-Rider and Ms. Amanda Kraft. Today's agenda, HB 104, Expedited Timber Sales by Representative Kronk with public testimony. SB 92, State Ownership of Submerged Lands by Senator Geisel. Then we're going to have a presentation by the Foreign Polluters Fee by Mr. Dave Banks, Managing Director of the Battle Group. First up is HB 104. This will be our first hearing. I'd like to invite Representative Kronk and Mr. Stancliffe to the table and walk us through your bill and the sectional and tell us why it's the greatest thing since sliced bread or sliced timber.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Bishop. Representative Mike Kronk, District 36, and my staff to my right is
Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kronk.
HB 104, unless you're, you know, really involved with the timber industry and, understand the Division of Forestry, it's really next to impossible to understand all the hoops that must be jumped through to convert trees into lumber or to build a house. One of our medium-scale operators asked how long it took to get, you know, identified commercial timber into to trees into the sawmill. It was over 5 years. And that's really just a long period of time. It's kind of unacceptable if we're trying to build a viable timber industry. So pretty much what we've, you know, we looked at everything we could and you know, put into HB 104 is, you know, to jumpstart a withering timber industry, bring employment to rural Alaska, and not only rural Alaska, but it's going to also be urban Alaska. We got Kenai, we got the Matsu, you got the Anchorage area that could use some of this stuff. Increase public safety by removing costly hazardous fuel trees. Reduce state expenses fighting fires. If we're managing our forests, hopefully our you know, costs are going to drop, you know, drastically. Provide cleaner and higher quality wood for biomass and home heating, and you know, provide some revenue for the state. We felt this legislation is really beneficial. It's needed. It's logical. Has a zero fiscal note. It'd be an immense fiscal and public benefit to our state and people. And I'll let Mr. Stancliffe add anything else that he has.
Thank you, Representative Kronk. Through the chair, members of the committee, this has been a very interesting bill to work on, and I worked on a few.
Mr. Stancliffe, just
this is Dave Stancliffe for the record.
I was getting the eye from Carrie over there, so thank you.
Representative Kronk directed me to find a reasonable way through legislation to address the impediments and the goals that he just laid out. The bill before you is a culmination of efforts working with industry and their affiliated associations, state foresters, both active and retired, Commissioner of DNR and the governor to bring about a more vibrant and expansive approach to Alaska's timber industry. The drafting of HB 104 from a technical standpoint is also a culmination of efforts involving House Resources, working on the original bill and the CS, the Attorney General offering their language, and one unanimously supported floor amendment in the second reading on the floor of the other body. The result has been a bipartisan support for the version in front of the committee on a 33-5 vote, final passage out of the other body. HB 104 addresses several challenges faced by the timber industry. The need for state timber identified well in advance of actual processing. They need an inventory out there to build an industry. Long-term sales to obtain the financing necessary for an expanding industry. 3-year sales do not work to gain the financing you need to have a vibrant timber industry. Quicker access to timber that A, is a threat to public safety, B, timber that is diseased, C, timber that is insect infested, D, timber that is necessary to support an increase of high value added uses, E, timber that negatively affects soil stability and the environment. And F, timber degradation that will cause loss of habitat and decrease in wildlife populations. To summarize, HB 104 streamlines the existing process used by Division of Forestry. A former state forest for the state of Alaska has provided a clear and understandable explanation of the salient changes in the process. If the committee would desire, I will go over those salient changes now, and it'll lay out precisely what we're looking at in the changes that have been made. Would that be satisfactory, Mr. Chairman?
That's perfect.
Okay. 3805035 explains the requirement for best interest finding. And 3805112 explains the requirement for a forest land use plan called a FLUP. Kind of an interesting word. As far as a time frame, timber sales under this bill, under a 117 or 124 sale, 117 being salvage, 124 standard, do not have to be included in the five-year schedule of timber sales. That savings alone is 2 years. Secondly, timber sold under 117, which is the salvage, they does not require a best interest finding. That time saving is at least 50 days. Third, timber sold under 117 salvage and standard 124 do not require a FLUP. Time savings of at least 50 days. So, a 117 timber sale carries an applied total time frame of no more than 2 years based on the statement, if not salvaged within 2 years, which you'll find on page 7, line 6. Here in Southeast, the Department of Forestry has taken as much as 4 years between issuing a best interest finding and offering the timber for sale. Time frames between issuing a best interest finding and a final best interest finding have taken as long as 6 months. The current sales comment period ended almost 60 days ago, and a final decision has not been issued yet in the case of one particular sale. So to sum it up, a 117 timber sale with these adjustments in 104 will save at least 100 days and up to 2 years in time, and a 124 sale at least 50 days and up to 2 years in time. And I, to just summarize, because it came up in the other body and there was confusion, under Article 8, Section 10 of the Constitution, public notice is required for any disposition of timber or any other mineral in the state. So nothing about this bill would take away that particular requirement. And that was confusion that probably was unnecessary, but it did happen. We just wanted you to know up front. So that summarizes what I have to say in terms of the time frames. We do have someone who worked for DNR previously on some of the finer details of the statutory questions. So I thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you. So, Mr. Stancliffe, this sectional right here, do you have this one in your...
Right. The sectional that we would use is expedited timber sales for version UA, like this. And that goes through the specifics on the bill.
You want to just walk us through that one?
Absolutely.
Then we can. Then it'll all come together for everybody.
It's a challenge. I'm getting an education in the process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 1 communicates the legislative intent of the bill. Section 2 removes the requirement for a best interest finding requirement for salvage sales. This matches the current law applied to negotiated sales under 3805.15. Please notice public notice is still required.
So section, this is what you were talking about,
exactly,
for Section 8 of the Constitution.
Correct.
Okay.
Section 3 expands the commission's discretion on type of sale to include new section 3805-124. And that's based on, in the bill it's laid out, if it's timber, if it's fire prone, if it's diseased, he can look at those type of extenuating circumstances and use discretion. Section 4 places salvage and expedited sales under the same forest land use plan exemption as sales of less than 10 acres. Important distinction. Section 5 allows salvage and expedited timber sales to include timber that was not in the five-year schedule. Section 6 sets a 25-year time frame for sales subject to a forest use plan unless the purchaser requests a shorter time frame, or the commissioner makes a written finding that a shorter time term is in the best interest of the state. Very important to remember, best interest findings apply all throughout this measure. Stumpage rates are to be renegotiated every 5 years to reflect changes in market conditions. Also very important, as market conditions change, the state needs to keep that in mind, because occasionally a timber operator, especially a small one, would be hard-pressed to pay the stumpage rates that maybe they paid in the past, depending on the economy. Number 7 amends the salvage sales statutes for clarity between salvage and expedited sales. Expedited sales elevating the attention of the commissioner and the state forester to move into an expedited mode.
Is that for the, Mr. Stancliffe, is that for the, that's the intent and goal of Section 7 is to turn that salvage into monetary yes. value and not let it rot on
yes.
the field?
That's right. Especially, Mr. Chairman, Dave Stancliffe, especially in the Beetle Kill offers two reasons to expedite. Number one, public safety, because it's a fire hazard when you see ridges and ridges and ridges of just brown. It doesn't matter whether it's on the hillside in Anchorage, it's on the Kenai or anywhere. So there's that part. But as you brought out, Mr. Chairman, if the beetle kill timber, if it sets for any length of time, it's not usable for much of anything. Even firewood after 3 or 4 years, it's just punky and really not very usable. To continue, Section 9 sets a minimum of 7 years when entering into a negotiated contract with a high-value added manufacturer, unless the purchaser requests less. That 7 years came from dealing with financers, be them banks or credit unions or wherever a person may go. For the type of investments that people make, even at a small scale, 7 years is about the minimum that a bank would want to see as collateral, so to speak, on the loan. So the upper limit remains at 25 years to conform with Section 6. This section also urges the commissioner to negotiate at least two of these contracts in each region of the state. Section 10 lays out the criteria the commissioner must consider when negotiating an expediting timber sale, and those other considerations that move it into expedited. And Section 11 sets immediate effective date.
I'd like to go back to Section 9.
Mr. Chairman, so
on page 8, I think starting in line 1, on this case, on this 25-year scenario, up to 25 years, those stumpage rates shall be redetermined by negotiation at least once every 3 years. Is that my interpretation correct?
During the term, what line are you on, Mr. Chairman?
Page 8, line 1.
Okay.
Unless I've got a different, I might be working off a different version of the bill. It's in Section 9.
Yeah.
It says the stumpage rate shall be redetermined by negotiation at least once every 3 years during the term of the contract.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to.
3 year periods. Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay. And, okay, Section 10, Section 11. Questions of the Representative Kronk or his staff, Senator Giesel. I'm sorry. Senator, I know your name, Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, under Section 7 on this new salvage sales, we're deleting the written finding that the disposal will serve, wait, sorry, it says, without making a written finding, the disposal will serve the best interest of the state. I guess maybe my question is not for you, but for somebody else that can.
We do have Helgi Ng, excuse me, Senator, on board for Division of Forestry.
Yeah, maybe kind of what that written finding would normally look like. Is it the actual best interest finding? I haven't found it in the statute.
Let's punt that to the Helgi Ng, State Forester, Division of Forestry. Helgi, are you on the line, and can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Thank you. Do you need Senator Kawasaki to restate his question?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Thank you. Helgi, on the salvage sales, the new section 3805117, it says the commissioner may, without making a written finding, and I'm wondering what that finding typically would look like. Like, in what format is it? Does the public have a chance to look at the best interest?
Through the chair, in this, Senator Kawasaki, in this section, the commissioner typically would make the determination that merchandising commercial timber before it rots would in fact be in the best interest of the state, in a nutshell.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In that nutshell, I guess how would that be developed? How would that finding be made? What like metrics are used? Because it's a pretty substantial change, I think.
Good Chair Senator Kawasaki, I am not sure I understand which change you are referring to in Section 117. Are you on page 7, line 1?
Yeah, through the chair, just to clarify, it says that the commissioner may, after making that finding, and now it's without. So I'm just curious what normally would entail a finding under the best interest of the state.
What normally would entail a finding would be the fact that the timber would lose value quickly, as Mr. Stancliffe alluded to, and therefore include a net loss of state resources. Therefore, it is in the best interest of the state to expedite the commercialization of this timber before it loses its value.
And through the chair. And normally, how long would that take? If there were a finding, how long would that finding, the disposal, how long would that take the department to normally do that?
It could take a fairly short period of time. I think Mr. Tancliffe mentioned 50 days. I think that may be accurate with that 30-day comment period.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Wilikowski?
So, yeah, Section 7 seems like a huge, like a pretty major change. We currently have a requirement that the commissioner has to make written findings, and now we're saying under this bill they don't have to make written findings. Under the current law, it says it will lose. He can offer up salvage sale timber if it will lose substantial economic value because of insect or disease epidemics or fire, and that's being removed. This looks like it's giving the commissioner the carte blanche to just declare wide swaths of land to be kind of unilaterally and without protection to people that might live in the area or people that use the area as salvage timber. Are there protections that are in place? Did I miss that part?
Senator Wilikowski, can I help with that question a little bit? Helgi, Mr. Ng, could you define what salvage timber?
Certainly. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, salvage timber is timber that is either already affected, i.e. dead or dying. And that's fairly evident to make that determination. In most cases, a professional forester can diagnose a tree as dying or one that is in imminent danger of being infected or threatened by wildfire. Those are two categories.
So, no, I'm out of your business, though.
No, thank you. I appreciate that. I'm trying to understand the bill. So I guess if that's the case, well, I guess number one, I don't know that I agree with that, that that's what the language says, because the language says may offer for salvage sale timber. It doesn't say salvage timber. It just says may offer for salvage sale timber that has lost substantial economic value. So is there, but there's no requirement to make a written finding that it's lost economic value. There's no requirement to say that it's going to lose economic value, is there?
Through the chair, is this a question for me?
Yes, sir.
If I understand the question correctly, the requirement of whether it's either already lost value or is going to lose value in the near future is really a determination to be made by the commissioner based upon his expertise and that of his staff, professional foresters that are qualified to make that determination.
Follow up? But why take out the requirement for a written finding then? Why not have a requirement for a written finding that it's in the best interest of the state to do that? I think most Alaskans would agree, hey, if you have a forest that's dying or is going to be infected, let's salvage it. I think many people would agree with that. There are some that would not. But why not take out the best interest finding? And then the commissioner can just issue a finding and say, well, it's in my opinion, and after we've researched this, that this forest is likely to die and it's going to be infected or it is being infected, and so we want to salvage it before it loses its value. Why not leave the best interest provision in there then?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I believe the timing aspect here is critical, and arguably the amount of time it takes for trees to lose economic value depends on where you are in the state, how much precipitation, how much moisture you get, but the explicit rationale for salvage is, of course, that time is of the essence, and just the logistics of setting up a logging operation and potentially constructing a road to get in there to get the timber before it rots on the stump in itself takes time, and so this would be an attempt to save as much time as possible.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, Mr. Ng, perhaps part of the consternation that you're hearing is found in Section 8, AS 3805-117. A sale under this section is limited to timber that has been, and you're talking about number one, killed by fire, insect, disease, or active nature, and you've mentioned number three, cleared as part of fire prevention or suppression activity. But number two says remove for conversion of land to a non-forest use, which I think is possibly causing a little bit of concern as well. What is your intent with number two? It's a new subsection. So this is new language. It's not existing. What's the intention with Section 8B2?
Through the chair, Senator, the intent is to merchandise trees that have been removed as part of a conversion process to a non-forest land use, and making sure that this timber will in fact be utilized.
I'd like to recognize Senator Dunbar's joined us and been here since 4 o'clock. Senator Kawasaki?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still don't get what that is, but just to move on. So Section 3, I actually did have kind of a broader question on, but as far as cleared for fire prevention or suppression activity, I guess what forests in the state of Alaska, you know, as warming occurs, would be considered off limits in this case on state lands? Are there any? I mean, maybe down here in the southeast where it's raining right now and raining most of the year, but pretty much everywhere else seems like a place where they could do fire suppression activity to prevent. I mean, I know that they've done a lot of fire cutting trails, for instance, in the Tanana Valley Forest.
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the concept of fire risk is one that varies across the state. You're right. And it is highly dependent on fire weather and conditions in any given year. And it's more than specific areas, but the general concept is that the commissioner will make a determination of areas that are at extraordinarily high risk of fire and destruction from wildfire as part of this process. And I'll certainly defer to the sponsor of the bill to add to that as well.
Through the chair, Dave Stancliffe here, staff to Representative Cronk. I guess this comes down to trusting the commissioner and the state forester. It's a trust issue to some extent for judgment. When the bill was drafted, for instance, I live in Tok, Alaska, and there's a lot of mature timber that can be harvested. If it's not harvested, it is an absolute threat to the community. And so our understanding and working with the division and with their policies of the past, where there has been fire mitigation harvest in the area, but there's need for more, that they would look at mature timber and they'd say this is valuable to an industry, which we have there, high value added, and it's in the best interest of the state and the community for public safety reasons to take down a perimeter, perhaps around an area or the community, and that would be the type of discretion that is envisioned in this bill, that we would trust the commissioner to look at the best interest finding for the state and to use discretion in their judgment on identifying that type of timber. So the question is whether a great part of the state could be lumped into that same language, again, boils down to how we feel about the commissioner and the state forester's discretion.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, just to continue on that, for the expedited sales, differently than the salvage sales, also have a pretty major change to it, Section 124. And in subsection C, it talks about burned by fire, infected by insects or disease, or threatened by fire. And then it goes through a process that it has to have this best interest finding. And there's four causes: can't affect soil stability, destruction of habitat for wildlife populations. So I guess I appreciate those. But what about a finding where, you know, I own a cabin, it's on a lake, but all the surrounding woods seem to be something that are fire prone, and would I as an owner of that cabin have any say in the forests around me being sort of taken up and consumed under this expedited timber sale? Or is there some other avenue in which I'd have to protest that? That's my concern.
So
through the chair, I think part of this too is what areas are commercially viable. there's only a circumference from a certain distance that it is makes it viable for commercial timber harvest. And you know, ultimately, if you have a cabin somewhere, whether I have a trapping cabin or somewhere else, the state is actually responsible for fire protection of that at extreme cost sometimes of helicoptering in and stuff. So if it's somewhere where you're helicoptering or it's off the road, I don't think that's going to be a viable commercial stand because no one can get there unless you know we start building really big roads all over the place. So I hope that suffices.
You know, Senator Wilikowski, then I want to come back and add to this conversation.
So just a general question and then another question back on Section 10, but how many acres of land are we talking about? What land would apply to this bill? Is this every state-owned land?
To the chair, Dave Stank with staff to Representative Kronk. In terms of the discretion of the commissioner and the state forester with regard to identifying timber on state land, it would apply statewide on state land if there's a danger and they determine there's a danger, and they can offer a sale to reduce that danger, they would be able to do so. In the case of the Tanana Valley State Forest, there are certainly a number of areas that they could look at. The thing I think that a lot of people who aren't in the industry probably don't take into consideration, there's a spot just outside of Tok, about 7 miles, where the division offered a timber sale. And it was on a particularly very steep slope and virtually unloggable, per se. So Representative Kronk's comments about keep in mind that we're talking about a sale that unless a company can log there, or unless they have decent access, unless it's profitable for them to go in, it's not going to be workable. So when you put all that into a nutshell, so to speak, we're not talking about large, massive areas throughout the state that some commissioner can say, oh, that could burn. Let's make sure it's logged. It has to work for the industry. And there's a lot of places that don't, which when you come into the carbon question, you'll be hearing more about, because that will only apply where the timber is accessible, is loggable, because that's the only credits we would earn. So a lot of that's going to be delineated very carefully.
Senator Wilikowski.
Would this bill apply, I assume, to the Chugach State Forest, for example, in Anchorage?
Mr. Chairman, as I read the bill, it would apply to state land, state forests. I know in the case of Tanana Valley State Forest, I was actually here when it was created by Senator Betty Fahrenkamp. Yes, those forests specifically were set aside for harvest where it is feasible, where it makes sense, where there's a best interest finding. And when these particular other things kick in, which are quite narrow, that focuses the department and the state forester to look at that much more intently.
And just a pure hypothetical, not seeing anybody would ever do this, but there's always concern in the hillside of Anchorage, for example, that there's fire danger. We've had some smaller fires along Turnagain. And could the commissioner come in under Section 7 and say, well, I think there's a substantial fire danger there, and I think we should clear-cut that whole area and to protect the people of Anchorage, and under Section 7, go ahead and authorize it, and then under Section 8, go ahead and expedite it. Could that happen?
I would leave the answer up to the person who is best qualified. That would be our state forester, Mr. Chairman, Dave Zandt.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, we have several tools in our toolkit for dealing with fire risk in urban areas like the Hillside and Anchorage, and fuels reduction and vegetation clearance around homes is foremost among them. I do not think a clear cut or other kind of silviculture in the hillside would really be feasible. Somebody would have to bid on a sale like that, and the logistics of falling timber near houses and near population is just not viable. The timber sale option in 104 is contemplated, I believe, for rural areas.
Follow up. And I didn't ask if you would do it. I just am wondering if a commissioner could do it, because the way I read Section 7, he could do it or she could do it without even issuing a best interest finding or making a written finding, and then under Section 10 say, we need to expedite this because there's a risk of fire there. Could that happen?
To the chair, Senator Wilkowski, to the extent that there is state land in that area, in theory, it could happen. I submit it's a relatively theoretical and unlikely event.
I'd like to follow up. Senator Wilkowski's got me dialed right in for the question I've been wanting to ask for the last 5 minutes. At the end of the day, it's still got to come back to the public notice is required by the Constitution, and the commissioner's not on the line, but I'm not going to assume anything, because when you assume something, you always get in trouble. But I would think if the in that hypothetical scenario, you wouldn't have enough database space at the department to take all the negative comments for this proposed sale. Anybody would like Helgi? Anybody wants to touch that or not touch it? That's just my point. And since I got the floor, I've got the gavel. I want to come back to something that we got off of before and never did fully finish. I want to come back to Section 8, Number 2, Line 19, removed for conversion of land to a non-forest use or cleared. Okay, so let's just stop right there. So what I'm thinking, and Representative Kronk, this is your bill, but where my head goes right to that one right there is I'm thinking back to 1984 when how many thousands of acres was pushed up in windrows in Delta Junction to create an ag project and went up in smoke. So would that be something there that removed for conversion? Would that be applicable in that case if there was another large ag sale that had harvestable timber? Would we go in and not get the best, highest use out of that for the state in that case before, instead of pushing it in a pile with a D9 and burning it up? Helgi?
Through the chair, chair and bishop. I'd like to point out that section is in fact already in statutes in Section 117, independent of House Bill 104. And the concept is the same, yes, that you are hoping to commercialize the state's timber values before they rot and get them to market. And this would be an example, be a subdivision or another project where forest is cleared and there is a need to commercialize the timber that was there before it goes to waste.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Section 10, line 23, talks about commissioner shall find that timber has been burned by fire, infected by insects or disease, or is in an area threatened by fire, insect, or disease. what's sort of the temporal relationship between the I guess the best interest finding and the threat of fire, insect, and disease. Is it like an imminent threat? Is it a threat within a month, a year, 5 years?
Through the chair, Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Kronk. That's all qualified, of course, with 1, 2, 3, and 4. Creates or will create a public safety issue or cause the destruction of habitat or decrease in wildlife, so on and so forth. So I would think that the commissioner and the state forester would take all of that into consideration on that type of decision. I would yield to the state forester to add to that, but that was our understanding.
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the statement is essentially correct, and the timing aspect is basically unknown, in that a wildfire could occur tomorrow in a given area. It could occur within 2 years, as in existing statute section 117. So it really is a probability-informed professional opinion by foresters in the local area, and based on their expertise and their experience with the local ecosystem and the fire weather and pattern.
Senator Wilkowski, then we got Senator Dunbar, and back to Senator Kosar.
Looking at 1, 2, 3, and 4, I mean, I would think any forest that was infected by spruce bark beetle or other insects or by a wildfire would apply to at least, well, could apply to 1 or 2. I mean, if there's a fire, it's certainly going to create a public safety issue, or could create. If there's a spruce bark beetle or fire, it certainly could cause or may cause destruction of habitat or decrease in wildlife populations. So which, I'm just curious, what land out of the millions of acres that the state owns would not be impacted by this and would not be eligible for an expedited timber sale? Can you name me some lands that would not be impacted that you could think of? Or maybe get back to the committee on that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the public safety issue is typically areas close to population centers, such as schools, power lines, other infrastructure, as regards to public safety issue. The destruction of habitat, wildlife population, is really a professional judgment decision based on biologists and foresters' professional opinion. And while you're right in the extreme, any area could be theoretically deemed to be at risk. The theme, I believe, is that professional experts in their discipline will single out the areas that are at extreme risk and judiciously apply this criterion to those areas.
Follow up.
So just using your words, would you be open to an amendment that said, or is an area at extreme risk of fire, insect, or disease? Would you support an amendment to that? Use those words?
looking at it, I don't really see a problem having that word there. Because that's what we're trying to identify.
We're just having a conversation. First here.
Okay. Yeah.
Can I go to Senator Dunbar? Senator Dunbar, then Senator Kosaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize for being late. I was presenting on a bill in another committee. And it's too bad, because I'm really interested in this bill. I happen to have worked as a wildland firefighter. And it is interesting. So to go to Senator Wilkowski's point, you know, they would drop us in helicopters sometimes nowhere near population centers because there was a historic cabin there or because there were traditional hunting grounds there. One fire called the Winter Trails Fire, I remember. There wasn't any human civilization or, you know, settlement for many, many miles around us. So as I read this now, I was struggling to think of any part of the state that this doesn't apply to, you know, that isn't at risk for a fire or for beetles or anything like that. And so I think I would welcome that kind of amendment. And I was going to ask that same question of the forester. My other question is, and I apologize if you already addressed this in committee, I just wasn't here. You know, can you give examples of times when the division or department wanted to go forward with a timber sale and was sort of foiled by the existing law? That is, they couldn't get to it in time, so they needed this expedited set of statutes and they didn't have it. Is that something that the agency could speak to, Mr. Chair?
Mr. Ng, or Representative Kronk, would you want to take that first?
Thank you, through the chair. I think part of this bill coming is the fact that we haven't managed our forests. So I don't know how much data we have. We just watch beetles grow from Kenai all the way up through there without actually doing any management for them. I think part of the baseline of this bill is to actually start managing our forests. I'm going to go off on a little tangent here. I have an article here that says Sweden's forests have doubled in size over the last 100 years because they actually manage their forests. They have 1% of the forests in the world, but they sell 10% of the product in the world at $17.4 billion of export. And we, you know, we live obviously in the greatest resource state there is, and we haven't managed our forests. And I think what this bill is trying to do is to give our forestry the tools to begin managing it and maybe bring some revenue in. But not only is this, it's not the revenue focus, it's the value of the local community focus. I mean, we could pretty much give timber away as long as the value is being returned to those communities where they're building homes, et cetera, or protecting from fires. We're always at fire risk. I think as soon as the temperature hits 80 degrees anywhere in the state, everybody, you know, kind of gets a little bit worried, you know, because now if we're starting to manage our forests, if we're identifying these areas where there is timber or we can get ahead of those beetles to stop, I think this gives the tools to that. And I think that's what forestry is looking at.
Can I ask a follow-up?
You sure can.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Representative Kronk. I guess I'm sort of trying to get at, you know, is forestry really prevented from doing that management now? Because ultimately, this isn't about, you know, if the state wants to create a fire break, for example, and I've seen them created on the fly very quickly with bulldozers and the like, but are they truly prevented on state lands from doing those kind of fire breaks? We're talking, I think, about commercial sales, correct? Like this is expedited sales. And right now, could they not offer a sale under existing statute? That's what I want to hear from forestry about. Are they stymied by existing statute? Could they say this is in the best interest of the state? We're going to sell this commercially and they can go in and harvest. And if they are stymied, then you know perhaps this will help them do it. But that's what I want to hear from them.
Mr. Chair, Dave Stankler for staff. For Representative Kronk, and we had gone through the changes in timelines earlier, and speaking on a specific case, the average time it takes if you were a medium-sized timber operation, hire maybe 20 people, logs, lumber, so forth, and you're in a state forest and you identify a beautiful stand of timber, the average time for you to get that timber to your mill now is 5 years. Our industry is hamstrung by a maze of findings and notices and public hearings, three different kinds, starting with a land use plan and then the best interest finding, the FLUP, and we have an advisory committee. We have bureaucratically created a system that a thriving timber industry simply can no longer function in. And we had an example from a forester in Southeast. Best interest finding was submitted. It's been years that they don't have a decision to move forward. That means a threat to your employees. It means a threat to the banks that you have to make payments to. The one particular instance that both Representative Kronk and I are very familiar with in Tope, and he laid it out for us, 6 years, it took to identify what was accessible commercially to get a timber sale available. And right now, with no sales on the shelf, he'll be out of business in 3 years because the quickest he could identify a sale, which would qualify under this perhaps as a sale of timber close to tote that needs to be removed for public safety reasons, would take 5 years. 5 years, maybe six. He laid out a situation of six that he's gone through. So long response, short answer is, we tried to narrow this down to make it the most beneficial timber to harvest and give it this expedited priority and not try to just pick an area anywhere in the state and say, let's do a timber sale. It costs money to lay out a timber sale, and if you can't sell the sale, that's state money that's wasted. So there's a little bit of self-correction in this, but taking 5 to 6 years to get it from the hillside to the mill just isn't working.
Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thank you. And I appreciate the idea that we want to try and have expedited services. But I do have some comments specifically on Section 5 of the bill. 5 of the bill is where it sort of exempts requirements of the typical sales schedule that you had mentioned. The typical sales schedule would require that public and the forest products industry would, I'm sorry, that there would be sufficient information both for the public and for the forest industry before a sale is held. And so under this, it looks like you're adding that those are now exemptions, the new salvage sale and then the amended expedited timber sales then would be completely exempted. Is that true? I guess it'd be whoever could answer.
I would defer to our state forester to give an exact answer on that.
Director Ng?
To the chair, Senator Kawasaki, the Section 5 exemption that you're referring to, I believe it's the exemption from the five-year schedule.
Okay.
Is that the answer of your question?
Yes. Yep. And then just to follow up on that, then when the question was asked before if there was a limitation on the size, it doesn't look like there's any limitation on size because there is no further definition on what that salvage sale could be negotiated or the expedited timber sale. Is that right?
Through the chair, my understanding of the bill, Senator Kawasaki, is correct.
Okay. And then finally, I do have some concerns because under the typical, Mr. Stancliffe was talking about the negotiated timber sales, there are some pretty specific conditions that have to be made. It's in 3805.123, dealing with the economic benefit, the high, the direct economic benefit to the local processor, the likelihood of commercial success, the extent to which the sale is likely to result in a stable job base, all good things, the existence of protections to ensure fish and wildlife habitat, and stumpage returns, and any reasonable foreseeable benefits to the state. But under both the salvage sales and the expedited sales, those are not requirements. And I just have a concern that it looks like salvage sales could be almost exclusively used under many, many conditions. Am I reading it wrong?
Mr. Ng?
Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, I can answer from my perspective and let the sponsor of the bill also respond, but I believe you're reading it correctly, but the key is in the emergency aspect of you're trading one public benefit for another to some extent. The value of being able to commercialize the public's timber before it rots is deemed to be sufficient to make some adjustments on other requirements.
Senator Mikulski, did you have a question? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And going off what Senator Kawasaki just said to Director Eng, if this legislation passes and we have the salvage sales, expedited timber sales, do you think anyone will ever use the traditional process again? Or is this sort of the new exception that will consume the rule? This will be the new standard practice.
Through the Chair, Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Cronk. The answer would be I certainly hope so. Certainly hope that the judgment of the professionals that we hire would make sure that happened. We're trying to narrow it down to the highest and best use for things other than people who buy timber and have a business. And so that's where the public safety comes into play, and the insect infestation. The bark beetles don't travel long distances. If you separate with strips of forest around an infested area, you can often slow or completely eradicate the travel of the beetles, depending on what cycle you catch them in. But this is the type of thing where the commissioner and state forester say, look, it meets all these criteria. It's marketable timber. We have a best interest finding. We'll issue a notice that we're going to go ahead and move on this particular type of timber sale in an expedited fashion. And it comes back again to trusting that our professionals follow the Constitution, the best interest finding, and do the notice requirements. And that's about as tight as you can get it. It's integrity and it's professionalism. And at some point we have to trust them just the way we might have to on the carbon issue.
Senator Kawasaki?
Thanks. I might just be reading this wrong, but I keep going back over 117 under salvage sales, and it says the commissioner may, without making the written finding and disposal, that the disposal serves the best interest of the state. So are we... Is there the best interest finding that's similar under the 123 negotiated timber sale or not? Like, is there a requirement that says there must be a land use plan so we decide whether hunting cabins and hunting trails are of a higher value than, say, timber? Or is that not, I mean, it looks like to me that you would not require that best interest finding from the state.
Through the Chair, Dave Stancliffe, staff to Representative Cronk. Well, I can say, because I can pull up the information, that at least in one publicly advertised tourism document, that the Tanana Valley State Forest is actually a park. And so we have state forests, and we have a reason for state forests. The question then becomes a judgmental one, because if you look at without making a written finding, there's other language to qualify that somewhat. So, again, I think worst case scenario, worst case commissioner, worst case state forester, what couldn't be messed up? So we just have to go a little bit on trust. And I think when you notice a sale, it will collect attention. That's what it's designed to do. And if people say, wait a minute, we've got cabins here and we don't want the timber cut all around our cabins, or it's going to somehow scar the land in a way that we find objectionable, I would hope that those type of things would come out. And that's about the best the commissioner and the state forester will have to go on.
I don't know when Mr. Chairman, I don't know when it comes out, though, just based on these sections. I just picked up the Land Act for public lands within Title 38, so I'm reading kind of in between the lines what we used to have and now what this is proposing we do. I recognize the need to try and find an easier way to get manufacturers of timber and commercial type logging done. But it also, I think there needs to be that a process at the very least to make sure that the best value for the land under the Public Lands and Alaska Land Act is met. And so if there's hunting grounds or other things like that, I just want to make sure that folks don't lose their traditional hunting grounds to a place that could be logged. And again, we just heard that there's zero accountability for how much acreage could be part of that land sale under both the salvage sale and the expedited timber sales.
Okay, I'm going to, there's no more questions for today. I'm going to go to public comment and get through that because we want to bring 92 back up. Then Senator Giesel has a little job to do with another piece of legislation here for us. And so we're going to go to public comment at this time. Katie Rooks, Prince of Wales. Katie, can you hear us and can put your name and affiliation on the record in 2 minutes of testimony, please?
Thank you. For the record, Katie Rooks, R-O-O-K-S. Thank you through the co-chair, Senator Bishop. Thank you to the committee for hearing my comments today on HB 104. I've just been listening to this hearing. I live on Prince of Wales Island, and I have been for 20 years. When I came here, I was a timber industry advocate. I had a forestry degree. I've been a wildland firefighter. I know how to cruise timber. I know how to do plot surveys. And now I understand the state process for timber sales because I've been studying that for the past year. It's taken me 20 years and seeing how the state of Alaska logs southeast and how they sell that timber to turn me from an industry advocate, I would say, when I came here to more of an industry opponent, although I don't oppose all logging. The Division of Forestry is currently poised to kill Will Pass, a small town on Prince of Wales. The way that relates to this bill is that when we're talking about trust with the commissioner and the head forester, and the fact that there are no stopgaps with this bill and no public process associated with it, we can compare that to what's happening right now. Helge Eng said in this hearing that falling timber near houses and buildings is just not viable. And the other person who just spoke, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, said that they would hope that people would speak up if the sale was in a place they didn't want it under this bill. That's already happening with the Division of Forestry's current program, and it's not working for those people. There's a timber sale planned within the municipality and the city limits of Whale Pass, let alone near somebody's recreation cabin in the middle of the woods. And these people are going to lose their hillside, and they have spoken loud and often about it and how bad it's going to be for their town. This bill would make it even easier for the Division of Forestry and the DNR, one person, the commissioner, to make this happen anywhere they want. As Senator Kawasaki rightly pointed out, with no best interest finding and no other stopgaps, no acreage limitation, no thresholds, this is a mistake. This is a bad bill, and the folks on Prince of Wales can tell you all about how bad it would be if the parties that would be getting the authority here got even more authority to make this happen across the state wherever they wanted to. Thank you very much for the time and for your consideration and for what you do for Alaska, all of you on the committee.
Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Joe Young, Young's Timber and Toke. Good afternoon. Put your name and affiliation on the record, please, in 2 minutes.
Okay. My name is Joe Young. I'm an owner of Young's Timber Inc. in Toke, Alaska, and I'm a big supporter of House Bill 104. And I want to thank the chairs, Bishop and Gazelle, and the rest of the Senate Resources Committee for allowing me to testify on the House Bill 104. Young's Timber Inc. has been in business since 1993, has mechanical harvesting side, log trucks, and four different types of sawmills producing a wide range of value-added products. And we have 12 employees working right now. The state of Alaska's three different forest regions is also under attack by insects and disease. Each of these three regions have overmature, dying, stagnant, and dense stands of trees, creating stressed-out forests. These stressed-out forests are producing a hormone attracting these insects. I just wanted to say that the process that's in currently that the Division of Forestry has in the statutes isn't working. In the Tok area, there hasn't been a sawlog timber sale since 2019. And I've gone from harvesting 40 acres a year because of the Manchild project and the Willow project. I'm now harvesting over 100 to 150 acres a year. And so I'm very concerned. I have one more year's supply of timber and I'm out. And I have a massive investment and I don't have any recourse, and I don't know where and when I'm going to get my next timber sale. This expedited timber sale will cure a lot of the value-added producers' need for long-term stable supply of timber. And I recommend to the State Resources Committee that they pass House Bill 104. Thank you.
Mr. Young, how many board feet do you cut a year, and how many? What's your maximum output through your mill
a year? Right now I'm doing about 500,000 board feet a year, and I could do up to 1 million board feet a year.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kawasaki has a question.
I do, Mr. Young. Thank you for being online. And I did have a question for you specifically because I know that you do work out there in the forest. So do you currently use the negotiated timber sales process under Section 1283?
Yes, I have. In the past, I've had two negotiated timber sales. The first one I got, I was able to leverage into about $600,000 worth of value-added equipment, and the second one I leveraged into about $400,000 worth of value-added equipment. And I want to do some more expansion, you know, because of right now I'm doing 2,000 4x4s for the North Slope where they're hauling pipe up there. And also, I'm doing lots of timbers and lumber and everything for the Manchild project, let alone not counting all the cabin logs and cabins that we're going to build this year. It's the timber industry is booming in Tok. It's putting a lot of people to work. And I think that the problem is we can't get any timber in Tok. Like I said, I haven't had a timber sale since 2019 before. Since the last sawlog timber sale was offered in Tok, that's been 5 years.
And just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, under the current salvage sales, have you ever taken advantage of that old salvage sale under 117?
I have in the past when the 1990 Tok River fire burnt. I was able to up on the Taylor Highway on the. The estate built a road into, oh, they call it the Porcupine Creek Road. And not only did I salvage there, but there was four or five other operators and probably hundreds of personal use firewood sales.
Thanks. And just one final question for Mr. Young. Again, thanks a lot for being here. It helps out. In the new Section 124 under expedited timber sales, it talks about these best interest finding and that the timber shall – that the timber's been burned, infected with insects or disease, or in an area threatened by fire insects. So the timber that's actually been burned, infected by insects or disease is probably not valued, but the adjacent wood would be. Is that kind of how I'm reading that?
I would say that if it's a fire-killed timber, yeah, the value doesn't leave for 15 years. And beetle-killed timber, because it's a slow death and from the outside they burrow in from the bark into the wood, that bark adheres to the bole wood, and the moisture comes in through those bug holes and rots the timber in about 3 years if it's standing.
Thank you.
Senator Wilikowski?
Yeah, thank you. Just appreciate the testimony. Is it the general practice when trees are harvested to plant new trees to replace those trees? Is that sort of industry standard in Alaska?
Right now, I think the biggest problem you have is you have, it's not the planting of the trees, it's too many stems per acre. And so, because sometimes you get, depends on the forest, but, and I don't know nothing about the southeast or south central, I'm a boreal forest guy, is that in the boreal forest we have is we get too many stems per acre, and that suppresses growth too.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Next, we're going to go to Cheryl Fecko, I think, in Craig, Alaska. And if you could put your name and affiliation on the record.
Yes, yes, thank you. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the Senate Resources Committee. This is Cheryl Fecko. I live in Craig, Alaska, and lived here for many years. I'm representing myself today. A few weeks ago, I testified opposing HB 104 before the House Resources Committee. And in looking at what is now before the Senate Resources Committee, I'm seeing a completely different version with several major changes that could potentially have serious negative impacts. I feel like the public deserves to have more time to kind of read through this amended bill and kind of try to internalize the changes that could be taking place, especially in places like Prince of Wales Island and, as Katie mentioned, the people of Whale Pass. I certainly hope there are additional opportunities to make comments considering these pretty major changes. So I guess that's really what I'd like to say. It's just I'm seeing a big, big change in what I testified against just a few weeks ago. Thank you.
You're welcome. The bill's not leaving today, so you'll have time to review it some more, and you could email the committee members with your thoughts. Thank you. Next, we're going to go to Andrew Traxler, it looks like, Papoose Milling. Did I get that right or not? Big Lake.
Yes, sir, that's correct. My name is Andrew Traxler. I own the sawmill business, Papoose Milling. I'm going to try to answer some questions. Of course, I support House Bill 104. You had questions whether or not people would still use the five-year timber sale schedule along with the expedited harvest of the salvage-type sales. And, yes, I would still be doing that. I'm currently using logs out of Nemana for the green spruce to be able to produce good lumber. And then we use the fire beetle kill and the return loads to the Nenana area because they need to dry firewood up there. Currently, we access our expedited type timber sale process through the Matsu Borough because they have legislation like what you're looking at right now already active. And currently, they have more timber sales that are harvesting this fire danger wood than what they've had in 50 years for timber sales. And so, you know, that's it shows it works. And so these forests that are, they're an imminent fire danger to the populations. We're harvesting near populations, and the logging companies are actually paying the Matsu Borough for the salvage harvest. And then you have the flip side of it where the state has to pay loggers millions of dollars to harvest land to provide essentially the same protection. So the Matsu Borough foresters selecting areas that need salvage to protect populations, and then we're buying the timber harvest from them.
All right. Thank you. Any questions? Mr. Traxler, seeing none, thank you. That concludes our online public testimonies. Anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing none, I'm going to leave public testimony open. And next, we're going to pick up SB 92, State Ownership of Chaberge Lands by Senator Giesel. Senator Giesel?
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the CS for Senate Bill 92. That's Work Order 33LS05363636, /U as in uniform, as our working document. And, Mr. Chairman, just to comment on the reason that this bill was sent back to the committee for this CS is the bill had moved out of committee when we heard from the Native corporations. who expressed concern that it was not clear enough that the exemption of public lands included them. And so my staff will explain how that's clarified in this CS, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. And then I'll object so Ms. O'Connor can do that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Julia O'Connor, staff to Senator Giesel. The committee substitute version U adopts the following changes. The phrase "and adjacent to" was removed in sections 1, 2, 3, 8, and 9. And in section 10, page 87, subsection C was added, reading, "and that was been unlawfully, and that has been lawfully selected for conveyance by a private party under a federal statute, but has not yet been conveyed to that private party." Thank you.
Okay. I'll, Senator Giesel.
So, Mr. Chairman, the Native corporations, Native communities have selected some land in many cases, but that land hasn't been conveyed yet. That's what this CS is saying. That's what this is clarifying. It hasn't been conveyed yet, therefore it is not subject to the bill.
Thank you. So seeing no further questions, I remove my objection. The CS is before us as our live bill. So, Senator Giesel.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill 92, Work Order 33, LS0536, /U as in uniform, out of committee with individual recommendations and attached still zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, the bill is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the document and transfer the power.
Mr. Chairman, before you take an at ease, the speaker that had been lined up to speak has left the committee meeting as there wasn't time remaining enough to do the presentation. So the meeting agenda is actually fulfilled at this time. So we can actually at this time, if it's all right with you, Mr. Co-Chair, we can conclude today's meeting and please sign the transmittal documents before you leave. The next meeting will be on Wednesday, April 26th at 3:30. On the agenda, Senate Bill 68, Public Notice for Water Rights, and Senate Bill 48, Carbon Offset Program on State Land. So at this time, the meeting will stand adjourned. Let the record reflect. The time is 4:53 p.m.